092043, Goodman versus the National Security Agency.
May it please the court. My name is Stephen Fuoco, and I stand before you on behalf of Claudette Goodman, plaintiff appellant seeking reversal of a summary judgment order. We ask for a reversal for one central reason that everything else seems to have emanated from, which we've identified as error. That was the narrow construction of the plaintiff's complaint in this particular case.
Now, can you point me to exact words in exact sentences of the complaint where the complaint alleges claims for unequal starting pay or retaliation?
Yes, Your Honor. The complaint is in the appendix.
Right.
And I believe you will find that in particular in the factual background segment that has common allegations in paragraph 15. Throughout the plaintiff's employment with defendants, the defendants treated plaintiff differently in the terms and conditions of her employment when compared to similarly situated males, in that the plaintiff has been subjected to adverse terms and conditions, not limited to number one, failure to afford plaintiff the opportunity to advance, number two, denial of promotion, three, retaliation for complaining, and number four, failure to compensate plaintiff in a matter consistent with the amounts received by similarly situated male employees. We draw no distinction between starting pay and supervisor pay. It was all similarly situated males. So naturally, you have a breakdown of two components. One, when my client started as a security officer, and two, after her promotion, comparing her rate as a female to the rate paid to the similarly situated male, who was Michael Warren.
But, of course, we're here on summary judgment review, and so we have to look beyond what was in the complaint to
yes.
what was argued in opposition to the summary judgment. So
exactly.
Was that sort of an argument about starting pay discrepancies made in response to your opponent's summary judgment argument?
Yes, it was. It's found in the record that's document 60, which was plaintiff's summary judgment response, and that was covered in our brief extensively, as well as, and the second component of the argument that I have today concerns the Rule 59 motion for reconsideration. But in the brief, we pointed out the fact that my client had made, in opposition to summary judgment, roughly five claims. Two had to do with Title VII, which was lower supervisor pay and retaliation, so 703 and 704, and three claims associated with the Equal Pay Act, the discrepancy in pay between females hired within a certain span of time when the company was first starting, the supervisor pay my client received, $8.75 compared to Michael Moore's $9, that was a material fact, a material dispute of fact in the record that should have precluded summary judgment, and the third one, which is Equal Pay Act retaliation, which in essence is the same as the Title VII retaliation claim that was made.
In your facts section, you set forth the salaries and identifying characteristics of 10 employees. Apparently, in numbered order 501 to 512, I noticed that there was no employee 504 or 511. What happened to them?
That's a very good question. If I remember the ADP payroll sheets correctly, they were hired and never really worked. So they were assigned an employee number, but either they were never working enough to justify a paycheck or something like that happened. And tallying that up again this morning to reach your question, Your Honor, we have 12 employees hired between June the 28th and October 8th of 2004. Of those 12 employees, seven were male, five were female. The male employees, three of them, two armed and one unarmed, were hired at $9 an hour. No unarmed female reached that starting pay rate. The highest paid female was paid 50 cents less with an unarmed status. The lowest paid female was paid $8 an hour, obviously $1 an hour less. my particular client in this array was paid 75 cents less, having an unarmed status, hired essentially at the same point in time to do work at, in essence, one facility, the Hilliard Homes. My client was at Northtown. We've laid out in the fact section how she couldn't work at Northtown after a month and was transferred to the Hilliard Homes. The Hilliard Homes had three shifts. We've identified all the core tasks. The appellees in the summary judgment proceeding in reply never sought to raise any affirmative defenses to the Equal Pay Act claims that we showed were prima facie as part of the summary judgment opposition briefing that we did. Rather than reach our claims and address those claims plainly set out in the record on 60, the court said, I looked at your complaint, and I find you conflate everything to be two things. One, a Title VII claim for just retaliation and only based on constructive discharge, and an Equal Pay Act claim that only concerns lower supervisor pay, in essence avoiding all the rest that are certainly there. So that's where it went wrong. That's where the district court avoided claims that should have precluded summary judgment, and we've raised those for the court in our briefs, and I'm not going to belabor that point. The last thing I'll say before I get too far into my rebuttal time is the Rule 59E motion for reconsideration was not taken and decided in the spirit in which it was made. The motion is important so the district court can correct things that for whatever reason escaped its attention without burdening this court with an appeal. We came forward and we showed the district court where those additional claims were. We laid out the evidence where they were prima facie. And rather than get a claim-by-claim analysis and reconsideration, we were told, oh, we already reached your core. By reaching your core, we've already decided. You showed us no evidence. So it was circular decision-making by talking about how the order could have been written differently rather than those claims that were not addressed. Thank you.
What was the material adverse action your client suffered?
The material adverse action in a retaliation context was the demotion from being a site supervisor to just being a shift supervisor at first, then the loss of the day shift work benefit for child care that mirrors the Washington case that was cited by the U.S. Supreme Court in Burlington. My client had a 13-year-old daughter at home. She made it very clear to Mr. Kiswani, I can't work anything other than a day shift. I can't work at night.
And she was transferred off that shift?
Yes. Mr. Kiswani admitted in his deposition that he had done that. And there was even a threat that they were going to send her back to Northtown to work from 6 p.m. to 12 noon. And you have the question of fact in the record where Michael Moore has said Mr. Kiswani uses work assignments as punishment. Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Hansen.
May it please the court, Mark Hansen for the appellees. Well, let me address the, it seems to be the main focus of the appellant's argument here, that the equal pay claim involved, or even the Title VII claim involved, unequal starting pay. First off, it appears that the appellant's not bringing up the issue under Title VII. They're just looking at it under the Equal Pay Act. But if you look at the complaint, in no place in the complaint is there any reference to disparate starting pay as being an issue here. And when the appellant's deposition was taken, she never identified starting pay as being an issue here. And in fact, when we asked, and it's part of the record, to our memorandum in support of summary judgment, it's an exhibit to that memorandum. We asked in interrogatories, identify those males who you allege were paid more than the appellant under the equal pay section of the complaint. They identify three people, Michael Moore, Vaughn Boswell, and Israel Ortiz. Now, Mr. Ortiz, I think, is clear at this point. He is not similarly situated to the appellant. The appellant doesn't push that issue. Mr. Ortiz was a roving supervisor. She was a supervisor working one site, as was Mr. Moore and Mr. Boswell. And in further, they don't identify anyone else regarding unequal pay. And in fact, they answer that they effectively, discovery from defendants is expected to reveal more male supervisors company-wide who received higher pay during the tenure of my employment. All throughout this case, the appellant was alleging and put in her complaint that she was paid less than similarly situated supervisors. And when she identified those supervisors who she thought were getting paid more than her, we obtained records, found out that they never were paid more than she was. She was paid $8.75 an hour. Both of them were paid $8.65 an hour.
Now, in this case, we have an affidavit from Mr. Moore saying he was paid more than Goodman, and we have deposition testimony contradicting the affidavit. The district court apparently decided that the deposition testimony was more reliable and that Moore was not paid more than Goodman. But isn't that a credibility determination or a weighing of the evidence?
Not if the record supports, not if there's nothing in the record to support a higher wage paid by any of these two supervisors. The whole point, when we first filed our motion for summary judgment, the disputed fact that the appellant tried to bring up that she was paid less than supervisors was her own statement that Michael Moore told her that he was making $9.50 an hour then.
But why?
That was complete hearsay. And so after discovery was closed, after the summary judgment was fully briefed, the appellant went in to supplement the record with this affidavit of Michael Moore that in fact didn't indicate that he was paid $9.50 an hour, and in fact said that he was paid $9 an hour as of January of 2006, long after Ms. Goodman had gone. At no point did he ever testify that he was making more than she was while she was working there. And in fact, he admits that when he told her that he was making more, he did it just to stir her up. And it in fact did stir her up. That's what drove her to complain to my client, hey, I'm getting paid less than Michael Moore.
Why aren't there canceled paychecks or bank statements as part of the record evidence here? Why do we have to rely, you know, on this NSA-produced spreadsheet?
Those were the records that we produced in this. That's what the appellant asked for. We were able to provide what their pay was. That's what we had available. At no point did starting pay ever become an issue in this case until after the summary judgment motion was filed. And then they still don't have any evidence showing that there's disparate pay with respect to starting pay anyway. What they want to use are pay records long after the time that Goodman started working. She started working at the end of August of 2004. And they're trying to use records of what people were paid in November, later that year. So there's no comparison. They never developed the record to show that these individuals who they're trying to now say started out at a higher pay, we don't even know where they worked. And there were other sites by then. We don't know what they were doing. There was no development of that because the bottom line is the appellant never brought that into the case. Never brought it in discovery, never raised it. And this issue of retaliation, she doesn't have an adverse employment action. She never complained of an adverse employment action. Ultimately, what stirred her up was a lie told to her by a fellow employee. She went to my guy and said, Michael Moore's getting paid more than I am. And he said, he tried to convince her that he wasn't. She didn't believe him, couldn't get over it, and ended up quitting. And she says in her deposition, unequivocally, that her job, there was no substantial change in her job duties up to the time that she quit, or that her hours were changed, or that the site changed. She said she continued to work at the Hilliard Homes, working the same hours, making the same pay, performing supervisory functions up to the day that she quit. So where's the adverse action? Where's the constructive discharge? You have to show that a reasonable person in her position felt the situation so hostile that she felt necessary to quit. Where in her deposition does she raise that type of hostile environment? She basically takes the position, and she said in her deposition that effectively, he's just not paying me, I'm just not getting paid what I should be paid as a supervisor. That's what it was all about. I just didn't think as a woman supervisor, period, he, meaning my client, just didn't want to pay me what I was worth. That's ultimately why she left, and whether it's brought under the Equal Pay Act, although you look at the operative provisions of the count of equal pay, never in there is there any statement of retaliation. In Title VII there is, and it's Title VII operative, count one, it says retaliation. But it really doesn't matter, because no matter how you view it, equal pay retaliation under that act, under Title VII, she still hasn't shown an adverse employment action. She hasn't shown that she was constructively discharged. She hasn't shown that she was paid less than, in fact, the two people who were most similarly situated to her, that she identified, Michael Moore, Vaughn Boswell, they all started at $8.25 an hour at the same time. And when she became a supervisor, she got paid $8.75 an hour. And when they became supervisors, they were paid $8.65 an hour. So even less than she was. So we just, and the idea that the district court didn't permit the appellant to establish their case, I think the district court bent over backwards to give the appellant a full opportunity to bring this case. Even to the point, as after discovery closed, after the summary judgment had been fully briefed, they came in and said, oh, well, we really didn't have any evidence of disparate pay, because all we had was a hearsay statement from my client. So they submit a supplemental affidavit of Michael Moore. The judge permitted that, although I really think in the judge's discretion, he could have denied that right. But he permitted him to bring that supplemental affidavit. We went through another round of discovery, and still they weren't able to show that she was paid less than similarly situated supervisors. So we would ask that the court decision be affirmed in full.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Fiocco.
The most important thing is that this was a summary judgment grant denying my client rights to trial on all the claims that she had prima facie evidence for. There were questions of fact throughout the record, one of which, most importantly, as it affects Title VII and Equal Pay Act claims for supervisor pay, concerns the dispute of fact regarding Michael Moore's actual pay rate. The court adopted spreadsheet evidence created by the defendant that Michael Moore was being paid $8.65, and that was
in conjunction with his deposition testimony.
There was
which trumps a contrary affidavit.
I understand. And there was no recognition, however, and this is where our appeal lies regarding Michael Moore and his pay rate, is Michael Moore admitted in his deposition, I made $9 an hour when I got to be the site supervisor. Unfortunately, the district court either didn't see the evidence or just didn't deal with that aspect of Mr. Moore's deposition testimony that the judge found to be especially reliable. That is a question of fact a reasonable jury could find in favor of my client if accepting that that's, in fact, what Michael Moore made.
After she left?
No. His testimony was when he became the site supervisor at the Hilliard Homes before his transfer. He made $9 an hour. He went from $8.25 to $9. There are questions throughout Mr. Moore's deposition regarding his consistency, but that in and of itself is for the fact finder to decide. And either the district court adopted a set of facts or just didn't see the conflict and the material dispute of fact in Mr. Moore's deposition, but it's there. And for that reason, Claudette was entitled to a trial. And we moved to reconsider. We laid out what the court hadn't dealt with, and yet still the result was the same. I see I'm out of time. Thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity to address you in person. We ask that the summary judgment denial be reversed.
Well, thanks to one and all, and the case will be taken under advisement. Thank you very much. We're going to go on to the next case.